fools! The mainlanders must not escape!
Baron Wainwright leaned forward in the longboat. Her velvet dress was blackened with soot and badly slashed, a plump breast almost fully exposed. But the leather bodice underneath had saved her life from the effects of a hail of flying debris. However, the Baron had lost a lot of her beautiful hair in the fire that engulfed her ville when the guard towers collapsed, and the side of her face was horribly blistered. Her vaunted beauty was gone, and her ville in ruins. Now, madness gleamed from her eyes, and the only thought in her mind was revenge.
Don't worry, cousin. They won't get away.
Baron Griffin worked the bolt on his Marlin 444 rifle. There were only four rounds for the Titanic weapon, but he swore to make every one of them draw blood. There were two Predark weapons in his gun belt, the Ruger 38 his father had given him on his deathbed, and his wife's 12-gauge scattergun. Baron Wainwright checked the load in her weapons. The Cold Hearts who attacked North Point and jacked her boat had made a critical mistake. They hadn't checked the warehouse located across the bay from the ville. The winter longboats had been stored there, undergoing their yearly repairs, along with a few birch bark canoes she used to trade with the outer islands. The Warhammer was gone, but 100 of the Sekhmen from Anchor and North Point had been jammed into the hodgepodge of longboats, a good dozen more riding along in the small canoes. They had mounted the Wendigo on a barge, and Wainwright knew the Outlanders didn't stand a chance against the Warwag's big rapid-fire guns. She grinned as she thought about the Warwag, as well as the bulky arbalest filling a nearby longboat. The boat just behind it was stacked high with arrows for the deadly weapon, and the mixed crew of the two vills was carrying every working firearm the two barons possessed, plus hundreds of boomerangs, spears, bolos, and grens. Baskets upon baskets of black powder grens. More than enough to blow a hole through the world if necessary. Cobbled together in less than an hour, this was more than a mere caravan or a flotilla. It was an armada.
Must be about noon. The fog's almost gone.
Good. That'll make it easier to chill them.
Suddenly, from ahead of them came the familiar noise they had been searching for, the engines of the Warhammer. Without waiting to be told, the Sekhmen in the center longboat started to work the windlass of their arbalest, pulling back the 10-foot bow in preparation of loading a yard-long arrow.
Just watch out for the one-eyed man. He's a crack shot with a blaster.
So am I.
Leaning against the gunwale to steady himself, Ryan looked through the telescopic sights of the Stire, but there was nothing to be seen across the bay but the damn fog. Lowering the rifle, he strained to listen to the timing drum. Counting in his head to get the beat, Ryan soon cursed at the realization that there were several drums. But the bastard things were pounding in such perfect unison that it was impossible for him to even guess the exact number. There could be dozens, maybe even hundreds.
Gaia, it sounds like the Baron sent everything she had after us.
Of course, madam. We have the speed, but they must intimately know this bay. It is the source of their livelihood. If our vessel becomes entangled with another sandbar, we shall most definitely become dead in the water.
Could use a hand. I'll go.
Fair enough. I'll give a shout if anybody gets past us.
If snakeskin boots appear on the stairs, the owner will never reach the bottom in one piece.
Good. And if you hear me call you Amanda or Abigail...
We blow the engine and sink this tub.
Mildred, go see if JB can get any more speed out of this thing. Then go load the arbalest. Looking at the ungainly weapon, Mildred nodded thoughtfully to herself, then strode into the wheelhouse. A split second later, Liana came out, holding a handful of leather quivers filled with arrows.
I found these in the armory. With the wind at our backs, they'll have much better range than anything coming this way.
Our thanks, dear lady. But now, you should seek refuge in the hold. Soon, we shall be in harm's way.
Where you go, I follow.
Doc took her small hand and gently squeezed. Then, as if not having seen it for a long time, he stared at the wedding ring on his left hand.
We need to talk, my dear.
Later. Liana, you know what a firebrand is?
Sure.
Go make some. Ryan pulled out the panga and tested the edge with a thumb. With Doc standing watch at the rear gunwale, Ryan went to the empty honeycomb and started hacking at the wooden pivot, alternating the angle of the strikes as if he were chopping down a tree. Soon the support cracked, and the spent rocket pod toppled and crashed onto the deck. Leaving the gunwale, Doc started to drag the honeycomb aft as Ryan hacked down the second launcher. Without any rockets, they were only good as shields. At least it gave them something better than the gunwale to stand behind. That was only waist high.
This position will also make them easy to shove overboard, in case we need to lighten the boat.
And a pipe bomb or two, stuffed inside, wouldn't hurt either.
Indeed not, sir. It would be most appropriate for us to give the Baron some small recompense for the use of her warship. And lead is the coin of the realm these days.
Bet your ass. Lashing the honeycombs into place with some rope, the men tested the knots to make sure they were secure. A few minutes later, Liana returned with a wicker basket full of rope and a ceramic demijohn and set the items down behind the impromptu barricade.
Cooking oil. I also told JB the old poem on how to find the passage to the open lake.
A poem?
Two tall pines will show you the way. One faces freedom, and the other looks away.
How the fuck does a tree look away?
Sir, trees have faces.
Faces?
Yes.
After a moment, Ryan shrugged in acceptance. Okay, the local trees had faces. Had to be muties. He just hoped that JB could figure out which way the tree was looking when the time came. Ahead of the boat, the bay was starting to narrow, as if becoming an inlet. The water studded with an archipelago of tiny islands, most of them too small for even a newborn stingwing to safely land on, much less support a full-grown tree. Mildred returned with a bulky munitions bag slung over her shoulder.
I brought air support.
Well done, madam.
Pulling out a knife, Doc began to cut the sounding line into several pieces of the exact same length. As the companion started to lash the rope to pipe bombs, a long, narrow boat slipped out of the fog bank. At the front was a wooden shield more suitable for an axe fight, but Ryan knew it would probably also serve well against handguns. Instantly, Ryan dropped the pipe bomb and swung up the stire. The Sekhman flipped over backward, his blood spraying across the other Sekhman filling the boat.
And the whale beholds Captain Ahab.
Galley my ass. That's a longboat. It's much faster than... Oh, shit!
Exiting the mist came another longboat, stuffed full of even more Sekhman, armed with a wide variety of weapons. One longboat was equipped with an obelisk and a stack of arrows, while another boasted the deadly bamboo honeycomb of a rocket launcher. And behind them all was a barge bearing the Wendigo. Instantly, the four companions stopped what they were doing and unleashed a barrage of lead at the honeycomb, cutting down a Sek woman trying to light the master fuse.
Get that one-eyed bastard!
Sek Chief Donovan fired his gun at the Warhammer. Incredibly, even at that distance, the lead hit the gunwale and the honeycomb. Kneeling behind the honeycomb, Ryan centered the crosshairs of the Stire on the snarling face of the Sek Chief, adjusted for the wind and distance, and gently squeezed the trigger. Spinning, Donovan fell, the rifle flying from his bandaged hand to fall into the lake. In reply, a swarm of boomerangs lashed out from the army of Sekhmen, along with a flurry of half-arrows from the rapid-fire crossbows. The spinning boomerangs fell short, skipping along the surface of the lake to hit the hull of the Warhammer before splashing into the bay. But arching high, the half-arrows came down like a rain of death, impacting everywhere on the warship. Lifting her crossbow, Liana sent off a single arrow, a piece of burning rope lashed to the shaft. For a long moment, it hung in the air, almost seeming to stand still. Then it arced down to hit the honeycomb on the longboat. A Sekhman yanked out the firebrand, then he doubled over. Another Sekhman grabbed the smoking firebrand and used it to ignite the master fuse of the rocket launcher. Lighting the fuse on a pipe bomb attached to the end of a rope, Duck spun it to near invisibility, then let go. The explosive charge sailed away, going much too high and lofting over the armada before violently detonating. The hail of shrapnel peppered the assorted crafts, the pieces of casing and bent nails shredding the exposed people and ripping apart the longboat carrying the honeycomb. Listing at first, the craft slowed, then tilted sideways, just as the rocket started to launch. Skipping across the bay, they blew up to other longboats before the honeycomb went under the surface. The other longboats raced to get away as there was fierce bubbling, and then the launcher detonated, a watery geyser rising high into the afternoon sky, raining pieces of bamboo and human organs across the turbulent bay. Spotting a busty woman who seemed to be in charge, Ryan guessed that had to be Baron Wainwright and centered his crosshairs on her when he saw Baron Griffin rise into view cradling a huge rifle.
That's a bastard Marlin.
Aiming quickly, the two men fired at the same moment. The round of Griffin's Marlin hit nothing, but the round from the Stire slammed the Baron smack in the chest and he dropped, splinters exploding from under his clothing.
Shit, more fucking armor.
Ryan tried again for the man's head and wasted two rounds hitting nothing. Then put two more into the hull, but the craft didn't even slow, much less sink. Next came the totally unexpected report of big bore guns from a couple of longboats. The companions ducked fast, and the gunwale of the Warhammer was pelted with incoming lead. As the companion stood to return fire, another salvo came. And Doc staggered backward, dropping his weapons as a dark red stain began to spread across his frilly shirt. He slumped to the deck. Crouching behind the gunwale, Mildred shoved the Uzi over to Ryan. He checked the clip, then stood. Mildred checked the position of Doc's wound. The upper arm was usually a good place to get shot, if that was possible. Lots of flesh and only a single major artery to worry about.
Just a flesh wound? Nothing serious?
Glad to hear it.
She pulled him forward to check the back of his arm. There was no corresponding hole.
Damn.
The slug was still in him. Mildred reached into the med kit to pull out a pair of needle-nose pliers recovered from a car shop, along with a bottle of shine.
This is gonna hurt.
Do your worst, Hippocrates.
Doc pulled out his old leather wallet and placed it between his teeth.
I am prepared.
Sloshing some shine over the pliers, Mildred plunged them into the wound, causing a surge of fresh blood. Doc went stiff, but said nothing.
Theo?
Tut, dear girl. I am fine. The good doctor's ministrations are sometimes medieval in nature, but always highly effective.
Don't talk with your mouth full.
Mildred felt the contact of steel on the soft lead. As carefully as possible, she extracted the mini-ball, doing the minimum of damage to the surrounding tissue, and briefly inspected it in the wan sunlight. In spite of the red smears of blood, there also seemed to be some other color on the lead.
Damn again. No choice, then. The bullet might be poison, Doc. You know what that means. Liana, you better look away.
But instead, Liana offered the doctor a butane lighter. Almost smiling at the act, Mildred poured some shine directly into the open wound, and Liana set it aflame. Going terribly pale, Doc shuddered from the rush of fire, then collapsed. Mildred began to sew the wound shut with an upholstery needle and lightweight fishing line.
I see you studied with Cort Strasser, my old torturer.
We interned together.
This I have no doubt, madam.
Now shut up. I'm trying to focus.
Mildred put away the instruments and wrapped the arm in a fresh bandage. Suddenly, the boat angled sharply to starboard. Just a little ways ahead of the craft was a tall pair of pine trees dominating a rocky escarpment. One of them was perfectly straight, while the other was badly windswept and bent over like an old man, pointing toward a break in the archipelago, a winding waterway that emptied into the vast body of the Great Lake. Safety was only minutes away. The Wendigo suddenly was within range and opened fire, the stream of lead from its rapid fire churning the lake water, tracking after the steaming Warhammer. Swaying to the motion of the steamboat, Ryan leveled the Stire. Sparks flew from the ricochets off the steel plating, then blood sprayed from the enemy gunport, the rapid fire veering upward to waste precious ammo on the empty sky. Before the wounded gunner could recover, Ryan put five more rounds into the gunport, and the rapid fire stopped working. Angling into the channel, the Warhammer began to move faster, leaving the combined armada behind in its wake. Making a fast decision, Ryan charged for the arbalest and dropped in a new arrow, then began hacking at the barbed head with his panga, wood chips flying everywhere. The Wendigo's rapid fire went back into operation, and Ryan hastily cranked the windlass. Punching over the medieval weapon, Cutter held his breath. He would probably only get a single chance at this. The hail of lead from the Wendigo chewed a path of destruction along the starboard gunwale, throwing out a storm of chips and splinters. Swaying to the motion of the boat, Ryan did nothing, waiting and watching. Clearing his mind of any distractions, Ryan still did nothing until the war wag turned slightly to get a better angle, and he instantly pressed the release lever. Straight and true, the mutilated arrow flashed away from the arbalest and slammed into the front of the Wendigo, exploding into splinters directly on the driver's tiny op port. The war wag was no longer a threat. A few minutes later, the Warhammer steamed through a channel created by two small islands and sailed into the limitless expanse of the Great Lake. There were no other steamboats on the island, and no matter how many Sekhmen the Baron put to the oars or how hard they whipped the slaves, no longboat could ever catch the steamboat in calm water.
Goodbye, Royal Island!
Now that the boat was out of range of the Sekhmen, Mildred shuffled wearily over to Doc and rechecked his wound.
Hurt much?
Like the dickens, madam. But then, after so many, I have always...
Mildred let him sleep and rigged a crude sling with a length of leather she normally used as a tourniquet. The bleeding had slowed considerably. Right now, the exhausted man needed sleep more than anything else. Balling up the bloody strip of cloth, she started to toss it overboard when a small hand grabbed her wrist.
No, not out here. Normblood in a bay sometimes summons a kraken, but out here, it always does.
But...
always.
Fair enough.
Mildred tucked the gory wad into a zip-top bag and stuffed that into a pocket to be disposed of later.
What's up?
Keep going straight until we lose sight of the land. Then circle back to the carrier.
Already doing just that.
What are you... where are we going?
Back to where we found you.
For more supplies?
Wish we could, but no. We weren't planning on fighting today. The damn near used every bit of brass we have. If there's even one functioning Sec Hunter droid on board that huge carrier, we couldn't stop it. Nobody's setting foot on the bastard ship.
Then why go back?
If the Sec droids are still working, then maybe the repair robots are too. And under no circumstances can we allow a functioning Matrans unit to fall into the hands of the local barons.
So, we're going back to smash them?
Better than that.
Ryan proceeded to explain the plan. As the day wore on, the steamboat chugged steadily due south, and the snowy tors of Royal Island sank below the horizon to disappear from sight. Immediately, JB altered their course to the west and started the long journey back. Reaching the mouth of the bay, Baron Griffin raised a hand, commanding the armada to a stop. The drummers relayed the order, and the remaining Sec men backpaddled furiously to ease the longboats to a gentle halt. Ahead of them was the vast sea.
All right, is anybody bleeding? Is there any blood on the outside of the hulls? Any on your oars or blasters?
Fully aware of the danger that surrounded them on every side, the combined armies studiously checked their possessions.
Well, check again! Everybody inspect the person to your right! We're out of the bay, and a single drop can put us into a world of hurt!
Knowing the Baron was referring to a kraken, the Sec men and women looked again, much more intently this time. While they were occupied, the two Barons turned away from the others to hold a private conversation.
How many did we lose?
6 longboats and 85 Sec men.
Are you sure, cousin?
Unfortunately, yes. I was so damn sure they would be an easy chill. How the fuck could anybody guess they had a working rapid fire? By the lost gods, I hate a fair fight. And now they've escaped, gone south across the sea.
Nonsense, it's a trick. Nobody could be feeb enough to leave our island paradise for the endless rad craters and acid rain of the mainland. That would be suicide.
Maybe. I agree, due south is death, but between the broken thing, the volcanoes, whirlpools, and krakens, so is every other direction.
Okay, if there's nowhere to run, then they're still on the world. So the question becomes, which way did they go, east or west?
We could split the fleet, but that's just as stoop as heading south.
Agreed.
Black dust, what I wouldn't give for a single falcon.
Have faith, cousin. I might know where they're going. A few days ago, I sent my Sec chief to Green Mountain to check on a story told by a hilly about some outlanders supposedly armed with blasters. It must have been them.
Green Mountain.
All right, you glebes! The rest break is over! Drummers, give me double time! We row west for Green Mountain! And there's a bag of steel waiting for the person who brings me the head of the one-eyed Outlander!
I'll give you 5 bags if he's still alive! Plus, you get to keep any of the others as your personal slaves!
As the drummers started a beat, the eager segmented women began rowing with renewed vigor, each making plans on how to capture the cowardly Outlanders alive and unharmed. It was late in the evening by the time the companions returned to the beached aircraft carrier. The huge green mountain of ivy was ridiculously easy to locate, standing out from the bare granite hills like an emerald sitting in a pile of fresh dung. For the moment, everyone was on deck, the firebox of the engine packed full with dry wood, and the boiler filled with clean water from the lake. The balcony of the ship they had jumped off was now fully exposed from their fight with the droids, the rusty metal jutting out like the hand of a beggar. Ryan mentally counted the steps they had climbed up, doing some rough calculations to try to figure out where the engine room should be located. Strangely enough, the plan had come to Ryan when the Warhammer had gotten caught on the sandbar. The nose of the boat was mired in the muck, yet the back end was still deep in the water. It occurred to him that the Harrington was in the exact same position, albeit on a much larger scale. If he could just breach the hull of the aircraft carrier, then the lake would flood the engine room, drowning the sectroids, and destroying the ancient machinery of the power plants, removing any chance of a possible repair. Without electricity, the Matrans unit was just an oddly shaped room. Trying to imagine the metal hidden under the thick growth of plants, Ryan realized that the trick would be to correctly guess the location of the massive engines without actually going inside the vessel.
The engine's gotta be near the rear. When we were there, the deck had a tilt, so the end must be deep.
True, but we want to breach the hull, not just blow a hole in a bilge pump or into a room full of war comps.
And those would be protected by watertight bulkheads.
All right, head for the stern. That's our best chance.
Aye, aye, skipper.
Gently moving against the tide, the boat eased around the imposing bulk of the carrier until it got to the far end. Reaching out with a panga, Ryan slashed at the vines and saw only darkness beyond.
Take her in! Dead slow!
Throttling down the steam engine, Doc eased the boat through the hanging curtain of vines to slip into the thick gloom. Lighting torches, the companions studied the rusty hull curving above their heads, the metal sloping downward to form a sort of grotto. The water below them was choked with kelp, but dimly seen was a large plane of metal. It was mostly eaten through with corrosion, but still identifiable as a propeller blade. Using that as his starting point, Ryan backtracked along the hull until reaching a relatively flat section. Having explored the wrecks of warships before, he knew the hull would be thicker than the reach of his arm, but the implode grant had a range of 15 feet, more than enough. Hopefully. Choosing a strong hanging vine, Ryan lashed the Gren in place so that it was dangling just above the choppy surface of the cold lake. Wrapping a fuse around the arming lever, Ryan made sure it was good and tight, then checked again before pulling out the ring and activating the device. When the fuse burned through, the lever would drop off and the Gren would detonate.
Get ready to leave!
Ryan leaned far over the gunwale and extended the torch. The fuse ignited and sizzled away into the morass of damp vines, moving a lot faster than he had thought it could.
Haul ass!
Doc shoved the throttle all the way forward. Sluggishly, the engine revved in power, and the steamboat began to chug faster as it moved away from the imposing bulk of the Harrington. Charging through the hanging vines, the boat emerged into the pale moonlight. Heading straight into the waves, Doc held as steady a course as possible, their speed steadily building.
I just hope this works. That was my only implode, Bran.
It'll work. And if not, we can always...
Just then, light flashed from inside the hanging cascade of flowering vines. Instantly, a powerful wind grabbed the Warhammer, trying to hold the boat and companions backward, even as the entire lake seemed to rush toward the carrier. Squinting through the wild spray, the companion saw that a large section of the vines was gone. The bare metal hull of the carrier was in plain sight, along with a 15-foot-wide hole in the hull, most of the wide gap situated under the surface. Swirling and gurgling, the lake rushed in through the breach.
Done and done. I just hope the damn ship doesn't have any...
A blinding flash of blue came from within the Harrington, and what strongly resembled a lightning bolt began to spread over the entire length of the warship. Thousands of flowery vines immediately withered and dropped away, to reveal the great ship for the world to see.
Electrical capacitors.
Megavolts of raw power canvassed over the warship, then expanded across the onrushing lake, leaping from wave to wave in a burning spider web. As it approached, the companions braced for death, but the static discharge faded into dancing sparks just before reaching their boat. Ryan allowed himself to ease his stance when from deep within the Harrington there came an explosion, and a hard quiver shook the entire vessel, pieces of the hull breaking off to tumble into the shallows. JB spun and charged down the stairs into the engine room.
Fire blast! We have cook-off!
Ryan dashed to the stern of the boat. Drawing his panga, he slashed at the ropes holding the two honeycombs into place.
Lighten the damn boat! Throw away everything we don't need!
Gaia, protect us all!
Christy sprinted for the heavy obelisk. The withered vines remaining on the Harrington now burst into flames like a million fuses, the burning network of electrical sparks and fire racing across the carrier to expose a score of crumpled jet fighters on the buckled flight deck. The smashed planes exploded into fireballs. Then the defensive guns along the sides of the carrier began to detonate, ripping away from the hull and still shooting as they tumbled through the turbulent night. A forward section of the hull erupted, throwing up a huge geyser of earth, stones, and trees. As if in reply, a salvo of rockets from within the carrier streaked into the sky, spiraling randomly.
I just wanted to flood the bastard ship, not remove it from the face of the Deathlands. If I'd known this was gonna happen, I'd have used a longer fucking fuse.
The boat was tossed about on the shaking lake, foaming waves crashing over the gunwale. Just then, the megaton cargo of ammunition within the ship began to discharge.
Ahoy, the engine room! We've got cook-off! Give me everything you've got, my friend!
There was no reply from the other end of the tube, but a few moments later, the steam engine took on a more powerful tone, and the boat began to noticeably move faster.
What's a cook-off?
Then Liana suddenly understood. The word had to mean exactly what it said. Theo had told her that the cargo bay of the carrier was full of live brass and grins, tons of the stuff. And now the metal hull was alive with a lightning bolt, hotter than the forge of any blacksmith, which obviously meant that at any second... In an explosion that brightened the night, the aircraft carrier violently detonated, spraying out a lambent halo of debris as it lifted from the shore in a thunderous column of smoke and roiling flame. Dropping to the deck, the companion stayed as low as possible as a hail of shrapnel hammered the wooden hull. Holding onto the wheel for dear life, Doc glanced backward through the maelstrom to see the aircraft carrier fall back onto the shore in a trip hammer crash that visibly shook the nearby foothills, starting an avalanche. Shattering into several large sections, the multi-level chunks of wreckage tumbled loosely across the landscape, smashing aside pine trees, and leaving behind a smoking contrail of buckled doors, twisted ladders, cookware, rifles, cables, tables, and a host of severely smashed sectroids.
Hallelujah!
Doc maintained his death grip on the wheel, forcing the boat to stay on course. With every passing tick of the clock, the companions got farther away from the crash site, until it thankfully dropped below the horizon.
All clear!
Prying themselves off the littered deck, the battered companions painfully rose to inspect the damage to their stolen boat. The Warhammer had a dozen splintery holes in the gunwale and deck of various sizes, but the hull still seemed intact and relatively seaworthy. Unexpectedly, a dead squid bobbed to the surface of the lake. Next came an assortment of various fish, then hundreds of them. In short order, the surface of the lake was packed solid with a sargasso of aquatic corpses of every description. Fish, turtles, snakes, crabs, beavers, seals, and a few things with multiple heads, for which no one had a name.
Do you think the gateway is still working after that?
Not a chance. That ship is triple-chilled.
Good.
Everybody okay?
We're fine, John, although I feel like I've spent a year inside a cement mixer.
Okay, the break is over. Back to work. JB, join Doc in the wheelhouse, and make sure we stay on the shortest course to Michigan. I'll be down in the engine room chopping wood. Liana, rustle up some hot food. The rest of you, check the hull for any leaks. We got a bastard long trip to Michigan, and there's no more land from here onward.
Easy as pie.
Watching the craggy shoreline for any sign of the stolen steamboat, the Barons and Sekmen heard the staggering array of explosions long before the longboats crested a rocky escarpment and saw that Green Mountain was gone. In its place, thick gray smoke covered the shore like a wool blanket, and huge pieces of what looked like machinery were strewn around amid crushed trees and churned dirt, the irregular slabs of metal oddly steaming in the cool night air.
By the lost gods, look at all that steel! There must be...
All of it! That is all of the fucking steel on the whole fucking world!
Metal! Unlimited metal!
Then a wave washed a score of limp fish onto the pebbled beach. The shore was covered with the shiny corpses. Thousands of fish of every possible description lay on the sand for as far as could be seen in the moonlight. Several foxes and bears had already come out of the woods to start feasting on the incredible bounty. Hesitantly, a Sek woman started to reach for a fat salmon floating on the water, but then quickly pulled her hand back. Strange deaths were always trouble. Tons of hot metal and waves of dead fish. Had the sea been nuked? Were they all now going to die of the red cough from rad poisoning?
Baron, how is this possible?
It was them. I don't know how, much less why, but this was done by the Outlanders. I can feel it in my bones.
And there they are.
On the horizon, a thin trickle of smoke rose into the silvery light of the moon. Then it faded and was gone.
My steamboat!
Drummer, give me ramming speed!
As the drummers promptly started beating out a new tempo, a monstrous shape broke the water between the Armada and their quarry, the mound of mottled flesh and tentacles soon rising high enough to actually blot out the light of the moon.
Dark Knight! A Kraken!
Greedily feasting upon the multitude of dead fish, the Kraken slowly turned and gazed stupidly for a moment at the flotilla. Then, in growing comprehension, the gigantic mutie started toward the hated two legs. Instantly, every Sec-Man began shooting wildly.
Stop! Stop! Stop firing, you thieves! Do nothing! Don't even breathe!
As the ragged barrage slowed to a halt, Wainwright pulled a small gourd from a sack and yanked out the cork to pour the oily contents directly into the lake. For a long minute, nothing happened, and the Kraken was almost upon them, when incredibly, the mutie slowed, then turned, to quickly return to the deep waters. The Sec-Man from North Pointville celebrated, while the ones from Anchor merely stared dumbfounded. How was this possible?
That was the blood of a dead Kraken. We chilled one several days ago, and I saved the blood for just such an emergency. It's the only thing on the world that makes them flee.
Got any more?
Plenty.
Enough to get us across the sea?
Oh, yes.
Excellent. All right! You heard my cousin! We want ramming speed!
Follow the Outlanders to the end of the world!
With a will, the tired Sec-Men returned to their arduous task, grimly intent upon making the Outlanders pay for their misery with the only coin of the realm. High overhead, polluted clouds formed a solid roof across the world. Sheet lightning flashing across the churning banks of orange and purple fumes in a never-ending barrage. Baiting one of the upholstery needles from her med kit with a rancid piece of beef left over from an old MRE pack, Mildred found the atmospheric display oddly comforting. The closer the companions got to the mainland, the more the weather was returning to normal. The sky looked like hell, but it was familiar, and it had been well over a day since they last saw any fog, much less the Aurora Borealis. Artfully casting out the makeshift fishing pole, Mildred immediately started pulling in the line by hand, jerking it occasionally to try to give the meat on the hook a semblance of life. So far, none of the companions had any luck fishing, and they were starting to get dangerously low on food. Liana had been unable to summon any snakes this far from land, and Jack had already cleaned out the bilge of rats, yielding far fewer than would have been expected on a craft this size. In another couple of days, the companions wouldn't have anything to eat.
Well, madam!
Still coming!
Indeed! The bastards can probably hear our engine, the same way we do their drums. Most certainly they can have no compass or sextant as a navigation aid.
They're just following the smoke.
Well, I want to know how they're keeping pace. Gaia, we've got a bastard steam engine and they're always just over the horizon.
Yeah, you're right about that. They should have passed out from exhaustion after the first day or so.
Liana, do the Barons have any more engines? Or maybe some sort of a trained mutie that can pull a longboat the way a horse does a cart?
No, those all died in the black fog long before I was born. These days, the Barons use a white powder. Crazed stuff. They give it to the slaves when they're out chopping through the winter ice. It makes them trip really strong, and they can't feel any pain anymore. They don't sleep or even want to eat or nothing. They just work away, laughing.
Laughing? You sure about that?
Oh, yes. I've seen a slave accidentally chop off his own leg and keep on breaking ice, still singing a happy work song until he toppled over.
That sounds like some form of PCP, probably mixed with jolt or wolfweed.
Having no answer for that, Liana merely shrugged and went back to playing her instrument, concentrating on calling in snakes to the baited hooks on the fishing lines. However, there was no answering tug inside her mind, aside from a faint sensation coming from the direction of Christy. Liana glanced that way to see the redhead looking back. The two women shared a secret smile, then went back to their work. Ryan stepped out from below decks, dripping sweat. He was stripped to his shorts and combat boots, a rag holding back his long curly hair. Taking a bucket from a niche, he filled it from over the side and poured the contents over his head, sluicing his body clean.
Hi, lover. How's the fuel holding out?
In answer, Ryan smashed the bucket over a raised knee and tuck the pieces under his arm before wearily stomping back down the stairs. A few moments later, Jack appeared holding an axe. Wordlessly, the half-naked teenager hacked apart the door to the stairwell, then made a bundle of the slats and returned to the engine room.
My guess would be that we are out of fuel, dear lady. How far do we have yet to travel, John Barrymore?
JB took out the mini-sextant and scanned the stormy clouds until getting a brief glimpse of the sun. Quickly, he did a few mental calculations, then checked a plastic map of North America.
According to this, we're already 50 miles inland, so I have no idea where we are at the moment.
Unless this is...
trouble? Did the Baron somehow get ahead of us?
No, it's snakes! I can feel them in my mind, hundreds and hundreds of snakes!
Food.
Better! These snakes hate the water, any type of water.
They're on dry land?
And there it is!
Far ahead of the boat was a rising swell of green that rapidly extended along the horizon as snow-capped mountains gradually began to ascend toward the heavens. Then the ruins of a metropolis came into focus, a ragged array of windowless skyscrapers and crumbling office buildings, and some kind of a dome. This city was in just about the worst state of anything Christie had ever seen. Most of the masonry had crumbled back into the soil from which it came, leaving only the bare metal skeleton jutting like the bones of a decaying corpse.
Yeah, we're not gonna find anything useful there. Aside from rust and dust and a zillion cockroaches.
Better steer clear of the dockyards. At this speed, if we hit a submerged bridge or a railroad, it'll rip off our keel as clean as opening itself heat.
Too true, madam. However, observe. There is a pristine beach just to the west of the city. That should serve us well as an impromptu dry dock.
Then we're gonna land?
Immediately, my dear. A bird in the hand and all that.
Okay, I'll go tell Ryan and Jack.
In only moments, she returned with the two sweaty men. They went directly to the bow to study the fallen metropolis and bathe in the cool, clean air.
Looks good. Between the ruins and the mountains, we can lose those barons easy in this sort of terrain.
On our world now.
However, those Sekhmen still outnumber us 10-1. So everybody get ready to run as soon as we hit the beach.
Quickly, the companions raced around the boat, reclaiming their meager possessions and stuffing them into their backpacks. Less than an hour later, Doc eased the boat through the cresting waves washing onto the smooth beach, the glistening sand grinding under their wooden hull until the boat came to a complete stop, only slightly tilting sideways. Then Doc pulled back the throttle to turn off the engine.
What now, oh captain, my captain?
We head for the valley between those two big mountains. Hopefully, they waste time checking the ruins. If for nothing else than sheer curiosity. There's nothing like this on Royal Island.
Nothing. But do not count too much on their curiosity.
Well, the only thing we can be sure that they'll wreck is the Warhammer. And when they do, we should be able to see the blast from the other side of the continent.
Great. Let's blow this popsicle stand.
Madam?
She means it's time to leave.
Christie kicked out the hinged section of the gunwale and jumped the yard to the sand, her S&W out and ready in case of any surprises. Spreading out, they walked swiftly along the pristine expanse of the silvery beach, leaving behind a clear trail of their footprints. The nearest branches were more than 500 yards away, and they weren't going to waste time going back. This was now a race to the nearest redoubt. Until the companions were safely locked inside, they could not allow anything to get in the way, or even slow them. Eventually, the sand merged with dirt and got firmer, allowing them to walk faster. However, the companions were only yards from the trees when they heard a familiar sound from the direction of the ruins. They turned to see a group of people on saddled horses galloping their way. Large men with long ponytails, they wore a mixture of pre-dark clothing and badly tanned hides, the vests edged with fringe. More important, each rider was sporting a rifle and a handgun. Then one of them smiled, and Ryan saw that his teeth were filed to needle-sharp points.
Cannies!
There would be no palaver or negotiation. This was a hunting trip for the cannibals, nothing more. Knowing how low the group was on brass, Ryan debated trying to run and hide in the forest. Then he decided on a different plan and quickly relayed brief instructions to the others.
Hold it right there, Outlanders!
The lead rider fired a rifle in their general direction. If the intimidation tactic had ever worked, it failed miserably this day. While most of the companions raised their hands in apparent surrender, JB quickly and surreptitiously lit the stubby fuse on a pipe bomb and let it fly. As the high explosive charge soared over the cannies, The companions dived for the sand and covered their ears. As the shockwave of the blast faded, Ryan charged forward, his ponga slashing at anything that moved. The others were right behind his attack. And soon they were alone on the beach, surrounded by corpses.
How did the Baron send these men after us? Or have they gotten here before us?
They're not the Baron's men. Just local boys. Cannies.
Cannies? But those are only legends. They don't really exist.
Not on your island, no. But alas, they most certainly do exist here.
Are there many more like these?
Some, but not many.
Is food short on this island?
No, my dear. Food is plentiful. These are simply men who have lost their way.
After they had looted the bodies for supplies and ammo, the companions headed straight back into the forest in the direction of the mountains.
So where in Kalkaska is the redoubt located?
City Hall.
Is it on the map?
Should be. Damn.
What's wrong?
Remember that crumbling shithole on the coast? The sagging ruin that looks like it burned down after getting nuked?
Kalkaska?
Yeah. Dark night. I thought 50 miles inland had a familiar ring.
No choice then. Back we go.
The companions did an abrupt about-face and kept going.
But what about the cannies?
We just have to reason with them.
Moving quickly, the companions had barely crested the top of a low hillock when a sprinkling of black shapes appeared on the horizon of the lake, heading steadily for the white sand shore.